Welcome back to ITB Berlin's Travel Hero podcast, where we dive deep into the trends shaping global travel with the people driving the change behind the scenes. I'm your host, Charlotte Lamp-Davies, with management consultancy A Bright Approach. And today, we're joined by Olivier Ponty, who's Director of Intelligence at Marketing at Forward Keys, which was recently acquired by Amadeus. Olivier is here to walk us through the latest outlook on air travel and travel trends in Europe and beyond as we hit peak summer holiday season. So strap yourselves in, it's going to be a big one. Olivier, it's great to have you with us today.
Hi Charlotte, it's wonderful being here.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before we kick off, as a little reminder to our audience, how about you tell us about Forward Keys before we dive in?
All right, Forward Keys in two sentences. We're a travel analytics company. We're specialized in air travel, and we monitor the evolution of air capacity. We monitor travel intent via searches and actual bookings. All of this in real time, and this makes it possible for us to know who will be traveling where and when.
That's indeed why you are invited today, just as we are standing in front of, as we said earlier, peak summer holiday season. So 2025 is already shaping up to be a record-breaking year for air capacity into Europe and beyond for that matter. But what are the standout figures? Please do share.
Europe continues its upward trend with air capacity still increasing in spite of a volatile geopolitical context. For the first half of the year alone, capacity is forecasted to be up by 7%. And the summer season, which already operates at high volumes, is still showing impressive growth at plus 6%. The key drivers for these capacity increases are Central and Eastern Europe at plus 9% and Southern Europe plus 7%.
Okay, that's really quite significant. Let's try to zoom in a little bit more. Sort of, let's have a look at which markets and destinations are really pushing those numbers.
Now, let's start with the key origin markets fueling the growth in air capacity. Poland stands out with a 14% increase, and the UAE is close behind at 10%. If we look at specific destinations, Warsaw is surging ahead at plus 20%, with Alicante and Milan growing 9% and 8% respectively. This said, I think that the takeaway here is that destinations across Europe are benefiting from this push in capacity. And this indicates that it's not just sun and beach or urban tourism being in the lift, but pretty much all segments within the travel sector. Also worth noting, Italy, the US and Turkey are all adding a substantial number of new connections into the EU-UK destinations, with 35, 34 and 32 new connections respectively. Interestingly, France is seeing a drop with 40 fewer connections during the January to May period, but the overall number of seats is increasing, which indicates stronger focus on routes which are in high demand.
So there is definitely a number of shifts here. I'm wondering if we can just have a little look or an update around the US outbound market, because maybe you have some particular insights here as well for us.
Yes, the US outbound market remains dynamic. From New York, we're seeing balanced growth across multiple new connections. And meanwhile, Florida has added just two to the Netherlands and Germany. This underlines how different US regions adopt varying strategies when it comes to expanding international air connectivity, and this is positive for European destinations.
We spoke about this the other day. We know that search intent is also a major indicator, but what are travelers actually looking for this summer? What does your data tell us?
Maybe just a word on what we mean by searches. We're not talking about your average search on Google. We're talking about searches on dedicated meta search engines like Skyscanner, Kiwi.com, Google Flights, you name it. We monitor them all. So here, what we get from this data is a real understanding of where there is travel intent and for which specific itineraries, whether these itineraries are operated by airline or not. That's a very interesting indicator. Now, what these searches show is a strong intent from Belgium. Intent is increasing by 28%, and also from Poland, with searches up by 13%. So those two countries are clear standouts. Outside of Europe, Morocco and Brazil are showing increased interest in European travel. We also see opportunities in what we could call underutilized routes, particularly in Northern Europe, where capacity growth is just 3%. And this aligns with changing traveler preferences, who are more eager to wander off the beaten track in summer and maybe also test coolcations, that is, vacations in cooler destinations.
As a Dane, I'm really fascinated to see Scandinavia becoming, of course, more popular than it might ever have been before. And on the Morocco and certainly Marrakesh side of things, we know that the figures there have been through the roof. Belgium was a little bit of a surprise to me, but I now feel that it's time for a revisit maybe. I know that there is also a policy dimension to this. I'm sure you'll have some data to back the next bit of the conversation up with that.
Yes, Charlotte, I'm glad you stressed this point, because I think it's really important to keep in mind that destinations can make a difference. One way they can make a difference is by implementing policies that will make the destination more attractive for given a traveler's segment. Let's talk about digital nomads for a while, because this is a very interesting segment. Those people tend to stay for long periods of time at a destination, therefore spend a significant amount of money, and most importantly, they spend this money in local businesses, hence they have a strong economic impact on destinations and local communities. Now, as we speak, 43% of European destinations have some kind of remote worker policies. That means that over half of the continent could potentially tap into long-stay travelers. In one of our recent studies, we compared Germany and Austria to illustrate how digital nomad readiness can differ even within a very close geographic area. Germany offers official freelance visa and effectively manages to attract travelers for long stays, while Austria does not currently offer a dedicated remote worker visa and has a much lower share of long stays. So yes, destinations can make a difference.
I want to talk a little bit about traveler profiles and lead times, because that's also very important for our audience to know about. So what should destinations be aware of here?
I think destinations need to have a clear understanding of the profiles that they attract and of the visitor profiles that they would like to attract, because that's not necessarily the same. And for this, you really need good data, especially in those destinations where in the high season, there's the perception that there are sometimes too many people at the same place at the same time. It's really important that you get the right people there, the people that will bring the most to your destinations. When looking at the summer season, due to the summer holidays, the school holidays, I think families are key, and some destinations are more attractive for families than others. I think here we have a clear standout with Paris, which manages to attract a lot of younger travelers thanks to the offer, especially the experience offered by Disneyland. Meanwhile, in a destination like Athens, for example, we can see that the destination can attract older demographics, probably because of what it can offer as well and the image of this destination. So whether you're Paris or Athens, it's really important to understand who you're attracting and how you can talk to these people, possibly to influence their behavior at the destination. Finally, I think that booking behavior varies widely by market and by destination within that market. That's where data can truly inform strategy. If you know your market, you can act on the right signals. And here again, you can make a difference.
How do you expect that traveler behavior will evolve in sort of response, if you like, to this surge in capacity that we were discussing earlier on? Because it's more than just filling seats, I guess, you know, something might be shifting altogether. I wonder if you might have some insights there.
As we speak, and again, the situation is changing could change at a very fast pace because we live in a world that is changing at a very fast pace. But as we speak, travel demand and air supply seem to go hand in hand. And one of the key challenges of airlines at the moment is basically to get those planes that they have booked to the main plane manufacturers years ago already. So if there's a bottleneck, it's more on the supply side than on the demand side at the moment. I think it's important to stress as well that it's getting busier. The travel sector is getting busier the whole year long. We're talking about the summer season during this podcast. We here have a clear example of a season which is getting longer and longer. So it starts earlier in June, it finishes later in September. I think it's very positive for destinations because it means that they can ensure a good level of activity throughout a longer period and possibly convert some of those seasonal jobs into more permanent jobs, at least have the people living from the tourism industry live from it longer.
I want to talk a little bit about, now that I have you here, about sort of your view on destination strategy. You've already touched on it a little bit, but with some destinations growing and others slowing down, how should destinations really think about their sort of competitive positioning and advantages for 2025? I know you're going to give me some more data here, I'm sure.
Not necessarily more data, but at least what I will stress is the need for data. Of course, I'm biased, right? But I'm also passionate about data. And I believe that destinations still haven't managed, most destinations still haven't managed to truly leverage the power of data. I think it's a worry because it means that they're not using their limited resources in the best possible way. Think about this. If you understand who's booking what, when, and when people will travel, how long they stay, what their profile is, if there are families, solo travelers, couples, business travelers, etc., you can much better time your marketing campaigns so that you target the right market at the right time for the right travel period. You can monitor the impact of your own activity as a destination. Is what I'm doing working or not? You know, all those marketing campaigns with no proper monitoring of the impact, it's just money thrown out of the window, and the sector cannot afford this anymore. So it's really important to have the right data and also to identify opportunities as early as possible and manage travel growth. So this requires anticipation, this requires scenario planning. In short, this requires good, fresh, forward-looking data.
For the broader context, you know, and I want to get back to the digital nomad a little bit. Let's give them a little bit of attention. You know, are we, to your mind, entering this new area where flexibility and remote work is maybe starting to reshape not just how and who travels, but how we travel? And, you know, what is the how and the why for these people when they travel? And how can we, as an industry, how can we accommodate that? I think my question might have been a bit convoluted, but maybe you got it.
I'm going to give you a very simple answer to this convoluted question. I think the travel sector has changed and remote workers are now part of it. The pandemic clearly gave a boost to remote work. There are some ups and downs. We see some companies getting back to more of the old ways, but not scrapping remote work altogether. Some others are still going further in this direction. And it is changing, but the important point is that remote work is there, and I believe it's there to stay. I'd like to add one thing. I mean, having the right policies for remote workers is just one dimension of what destinations can do to make a difference. We've talked about using data. We've talked about having very targeted approach to marketing campaigns, trying to attract the visitors you want. And I think events also need to be mentioned quite specifically, because there's a lot of interest from travelers for events, whether those events are sport events, cultural events like concerts. There really is strong demand for these type of experiences. And these experiences can be steered by destinations. They have a key role to play here as well and can shape the tourist flows that go to their destinations. So that's one more tool in the destination's toolbox to influence travel flows and get those people when you need them the most.
Olivier, any last thoughts from you with data in mind here for our audience?
I think the industry has been talking about the power of data for many, many years now. The results are somewhat mixed, I would say. And I think it's because many companies, travel businesses, are not sure yet where to begin with data. They realize that there's more and more data available, but they find it difficult to identify which data is going to make the most difference for their day-to-day activity. So my tip to those businesses, to destinations, is to start with the most important decisions that they can make on a day-to-day basis. What kind of concrete actions can they take? And how can these actions be based on data rather than on gut feeling? So start with what you can do and then start thinking about the data you need to make those decisions better, data-driven. Maybe you already have the data. Maybe it's out there within your own company, or maybe it's easy to get from a third party. If it's not there, build it, buy it, but do not ignore it, because that's the way you will be able to move forward. And the industry really needs this.
This could not have resonated better with me, and I think also with all of our wonderful listeners. Olivier, it's time to wrap up. Thank you for all your insights. You have been an absolutely wonderful guest. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Charlotte.
And I would say that if you're a destination, a hotelier or a DMC watching air travel trends, this is data that you cannot afford to ignore. Until next time. And I would like to say thanks for tuning in to ITB Berlin Travel Hero Podcast. And if you join us next month, I hope you will. We are going to explore trends shaping what's next for the LGBTQ+ community. You can find more Travel Hero podcasts on ITB Berlin's website. And we hope you'll listen back in again, and safe travels in the meantime.